FS Insider, a premium edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. Today's host is Senior Editor Chris Sheridan.
Bitcoin has hit a new low for the year, dropping below 5,000. However, if you look at just the price, you might be misled into thinking that Bitcoin, or the technology behind it called blockchain, is failing. Nothing could be further from the truth. And in fact, what most people don't realize is that foreign governments, as we speak, are hard at work developing payment systems to challenge and remove the US dollar as the world's reserve currency. Will they succeed? Well, there's a new book out titled Beyond Blockchain, The Death of the Dollar and the Rise of Digital Currency that says they will likely eventually succeed in doing this. The author of the book is Eric Townsend, who joins us today. Eric, let's talk about some of the current developments that you discuss in your book, some of which you even predicted ahead of time, looking at Russia, China, even Germany. We could probably throw the IMF in there. Talking about the development of a new international payment system independent of the United States.
Well, Chris, it's fantastic to be back on Financial Sense. Thanks for inviting me. And yeah, you know, it's amazing the world we live in. The analogy I've been using is the way to think about cryptocurrency. Imagine that somebody invented a better way to process voting in elections that completely eliminates voter fraud and makes everything fair. So everybody gets exactly one vote, even in Broward County, Florida. It's completely fair. Obviously, as a society, we would welcome that invention. But now imagine the guy who invented the voting machine decides that he did such a good job inventing it that he's entitled to now go and stage his own elections and decide who's going to be the next president of the United States. Well, obviously, that guy doesn't really have the authority just because he came up with a better mousetrap to run the new election system. If you think about what cryptocurrency has been, these guys invented an absolute breakthrough in computer science with distributed ledger technology, and then they added digital currency, which is a fantastic innovation that I'm convinced is going to change the world. But then they went and effectively staged their own elections. The cryptocurrency guys are libertarian privacy advocates who are coining their own money, doing something which central banks for thousands of years of monetary history have never allowed anyone but the government and the government's designees to do. So what we've got is the combination of this fantastic invention of digital currency and then these kind of renegade guys who invented it going off and coining their own money. And it's all being lumped together and people are not really breaking it into two separate issues, which is what I think it is. And what we're seeing more and more, as you say, is the IMF even has recognized, just as I predicted in the book that they would. It was ironic that it happened on the very same day that the book came out. But my prediction has been that governments will recognize, finally, they'll wake up and say, hey, wait a minute, nobody benefits more from the invention of digital currency technology than governments themselves. But we should be in charge of this, not libertarian privacy activists that invented Bitcoin. The government should be in charge. We're going to take that power back. And I think we're just at the very beginning stages of that starting to happen.
Now, Eric, off the air, you were telling me that this book is not a cryptocurrency book, right? It's not just about blockchain. And you have a really good grasp on the technology. I mean, you explain how it works. You go through the nuts and bolts, but that's not the main feature of this book. Clarify this for our audience, if you will. The main theme is about this idea that foreign nations believe the US dollar has a hegemony over the global payment system, and they're really working hard to try to replace it and develop an independent system. So talk about some of the current developments that we've seen when we think about China, Russia, and some of the other foreign governments out there.
Sure. Well, the reason that I wrote the book is because I want to change the conversation. I feel the entire industry is focused on the wrong thing. They're all thinking about, okay, cryptocurrency, yes or no. It's not a yes or no. It's digital currency, yes or no. The answer is yes. And then the second question is, will cryptocurrency be the way that that plays out? I think probably not. And people are not separating those issues. So what I wanted to do by writing the book was to get people to separately consider the question of, will digital currency dominate the entire global monetary system over the next 20 years? I'm convinced the answer is yes. And then to get them to separate the question of whether or not cryptocurrency, that is, currency where private sector individuals are coining their own money by creating their own currency systems independent from government, whether or not that really is how digital currency is going to take over the global financial system. And the thing that I think it's just because it's different parts of the industry that are looking at these things, the people focused on cryptocurrency don't seem to really realize how big of an issue the U.S. dollar's role is as the center of the global financial system, serving as the world's global reserve currency. The thing is, a lot of foreign governments, particularly Russia and China, are very, very focused on that issue and have been for many years. Sergei Glazyev is the scholar in Russia, and now, as of the beginning of 2018, he's been officially appointed as an economic advisor to Vladimir Putin. He has been obsessed for years with persuading the rest of the world to ditch the dollar and do business on other currencies to take away that tremendous advantage the United States derives from being the issuer of the world's global reserve currency. Now, something that I don't think the U.S. government has figured out, but I'm convinced China and Russia have very much figured out, is if your goal is to challenge or try to take away the dollar's dominance over the global financial system, what tools do you have in order to do that with? I think that digital currency technology is the most obvious lever of influence, because I think that anyone who's really paying attention can see that digital currency technology is going to change and revolutionize and dramatically improve the global monetary system over the next 20 or 30 years. Well, if that's going to happen, whoever is first to do it has the opportunity to say, hey, let's create the global scale digital currency system, which is government backed and is going to challenge the dollar's hegemony over the global financial system. So we want to replace the U.S. dollar with a new global reserve currency. A lot of people around the world have wanted to do that for a long time. Well, hey, if we create a global scale digital currency, the whole world's all excited about cryptocurrency. We can get them excited about a government issued digital currency, and we can use that as a strategy to attack the dollar's hegemony the dollar's hegemony within the overall global financial system. Now, just a few years ago, Chris, we were really just talking about Russia and China and the other BRICS countries that have historically kind of been at odds with the United States. But this summer, we saw the German finance minister standing up and saying, hey, we need to create a payment system that is independent of the unreasonable influence that the U.S. government projects over the SWIFT payment system. And SWIFT, as you know, is the backbone of all international trade settlement. It's basically the world's global wire transfer network for transferring money around from different countries. Well, I thought when that guy from Germany said that he was going to, you know, suddenly get sidelined because he stepped out of line by saying something against the United States, the, you know, German's long-term ally. A month later, we saw the head of the European Union's foreign policy standing shoulder to shoulder with the Iranian finance minister announcing at the United Nations in New York City that the European Union was committed to working with Iran to creating an alternate payment system to bypass SWIFT so that they could protect the right of European countries to continue to do business with Iran, because it's a country that has not been sanctioned by Europe, has not been sanctioned by the United Nations. It's only been sanctioned unilaterally by the United States. And when other countries said, hey, United States, you can decide what you want to do, but we're going to continue to do business with Iran. We disagree with President Trump. The United States threatened to issue sanctions against the SWIFT payment system itself if it didn't cut Iran off. And they basically bowed to U.S. authority and they cut Iran off and cut it out of the SWIFT payment system. To see the European Union respond to that and say, we recognize the United States foreign policy as abusive and we're going to create an alternate system to bypass it, that coming from the European Union, to me, is a striking change. For Russia to be slinging that kind of propaganda was one thing. But for the European Union to say that, we're seeing that the world is slowly coming around to this view that the dollar serving as the center of the global financial system is a problem that needs to be solved. If you recognize that as a problem, if that's your viewpoint, and it certainly is not the United States viewpoint, but it is Russia and China's view, and to an increasing extent, it's Europe's view, what better tool is there than digital currency technology to create a digital currency which replaces the dollar as the world's global reserve currency?
Now, Eric, what would you say to those that push back on this idea and say, well, the technical challenges are too great? Or, for example, Venezuela launched their Petro digital currency as a means of doing this, and it's just been a flop. You know, what would you say to those that push back against seeing this really replace the U.S. dollar going forward?
Well, I think that there are lots and lots of good reasons to question how, you know, it's a really big deal to replace the dollar in the global financial system. But I don't think it's technology challenges. Venezuela's Petro was Nicolas Maduro's little stage act. It was not taken seriously by hardly anyone. And I don't think that activity by Venezuela even counts. So far, we haven't seen any nations trying to create national digital currency systems. Malta, a very small country, has kind of said, we believe that digital currency is the future. We want to be part of it. And they're thinking about maybe adopting a cryptocurrency as an alternate official government sanctioned currency. But as far as a government building its own digital currency system, it was really only Christine Lagarde's announcement last week at the IMF, where she said she really believes that central bankers should be looking seriously at this. They want to start with a replacement for effectively a digital SDR. So it's not really a consumer use currency. It's an interbank or international exchange currency. I think that this will lead to national currencies, but the thing is, you know, governments are famously slow and bureaucratic. It's not a technology challenge. It's a question of adopting technology into a government organization that is not equipped to build it. And what's going on right now is most of the private sector activity in digital currency is focused on cryptocurrencies. And it's no surprise that it is, Chris, because look at what's happened. Anybody who essentially copies the design of Bitcoin, pre-mines a whole bunch of the money supply to keep for themselves, and launches a new cryptocurrency. Until the last 6 months or so, everybody who did that got rich very quickly because there were all kinds of people buying up every low-priced crypto token they could get their hands on. It was a speculative mania. It didn't make any sense. It was just like the tulip mania of the 1630s. But it was happening. And so all of the attention in the private sector was focused on that. What we need to get to is where the private sector, where Silicon Valley and particularly the Sand Hill Road venture capital crowd recognize the real opportunity is not cryptocurrency. Cryptocurrency was just a sideshow. The real opportunity is to design digital currency systems, not so that they appeal to libertarian privacy activists, but so that they appeal to central bankers, so that you can design a digital currency system and sell it to central bankers to have them adopt it as their national currency for creating a government-issued digital currency, which is designed not only to compete with the dollar, but also would probably have the opposite design characteristics of Bitcoin. In other words, Bitcoin is designed to take power away from government, to prevent central bankers from being able to control the size of the money supply, to prevent central bankers from having any authority or control over the system. Technology is a double-edged sword. Yes, you can use it to take power away from government, but by the same token, you can design a digital currency system to intentionally give more power to government. And if you look at how monetary policy tools work today, it's at best as sophisticated as a horse and buggy. You know, the fractional reserve banking system is 300 or 400 years old. And what we've done is central bankers have cobbled together these tricks and techniques that we call monetary policy to cajole the system, to try to influence indirectly what will cause banks to change their lending policies in order to increase or decrease the money supply. Imagine that you were to design a currency system using digital technology from the ground up with the goal of giving central bankers much more authority and control and much more effective monetary policy tools. Now, there's a big piece of that, Chris, that could be the best thing in centuries for humanity and for society. But frankly, it could easily turn ugly very quickly. You could get an Orwellian outcome where all of a sudden somebody in government decides that government needs all kinds of authority to do things that were never possible in the conventional monetary system. And all of a sudden, you've got George Orwell's 1984, where the government is able to track and control and monitor every single penny of wealth that exists anywhere in the world, and they have the ability to cancel and claw back transactions and you know, seize bank accounts in other countries that they don't even have any jurisdiction over, and so forth. So I think the really big challenge of the next 20 to 30 years is going to be how the private sector takes the lead in proposing something to government which appeals to government, I'll call it government's good desires, the desire of central bankers to have more effective control so that if they insist on trying to manage the economy through monetary policy tools, at least they have effective modern tools for doing so, while at the same time somehow preventing us from getting to that Orwellian outcome where it creates just an unreasonable amount of government power. And it's going to be a really interesting balancing act to see how we get there. But if you think about the whole digital currency space right now, it's all focused on these private issue digital currencies. I don't think where that's where the opportunity is. The opportunity to launch a company that is going to be far more profitable than Google or Facebook or any of these other Silicon Valley unicorns is going to be to launch the company that invents and designs the global scale digital currency system, which eventually becomes the world digital currency that is supranational, that many different countries all sign on to and participate in. And one of the things I talk about in the book is how to design that so that even if you are serving multiple jurisdictions, multiple national jurisdictions, that each one of those countries' central banks still has some authority over the system through independent monetary policy controls.
Well, and you're really building in your book upon some of the comments that were made by Christine Lagarde at the IMF and many of these other nations, and how exactly that would be done. And you discuss the secret sauce, as you put it, for propelling a cryptocurrency to the scale of global reserve status, right? And actually replacing the dollar as a global reserve currency. What is that secret sauce that you envision to do that?
Well, first, I can't resist. I think Christine Lagarde is building on my ideas since I wrote and released the book a day before she made those comments. I'm sure she read the book and that's what
influenced her. Of course.
Yes, but aside from that, the secret sauce, as far as I'm concerned, is not the currency system itself. It's actually what I'm calling the digital sovereign bond market. Why is that? The question you have to ask yourself, Chris, is why is the U.S. dollar still the world's reserve currency 45 years after President Nixon effectively defaulted on the Bretton Woods Treaty, which is what established the dollar as the global reserve currency, by taking the dollar off of the gold peg back in August of 1971. And even as we now see the petrodollar system, which had played a big part in perpetuating the dollar's role as global currency, breaking down as the U.S. is now producing more oil than Saudi Arabia is, and less of a percentage of OPEC outputs are being sold to the United States. So that power dynamic is breaking down. And you've also got countries around the world, now including Europe, very directly criticizing U.S. foreign policy and saying that the dollar needs to be taken out of the central focus, needs to lose the hegemony that it has over the global financial system. How is it possible, with all of these factors working against it, that the U.S. dollar is still the world's global reserve currency? And the answer is actually very clear. The reason the dollar continues to hold that role is very simply that there is no viable alternative to the U.S. Treasury bond market for central bank reserve assets. Okay, what are central bank reserve assets? We're talking about the piggy bank or the savings account for an entire country. The assets that they sell to raise cash in an emergency when they need to raise money to defend their own currency in a currency crisis. Well, if that is why a central bank holds reserve assets, they need something that's not just liquid, but that is sure to be liquid even in a very adverse market situation. If a global currency crisis is starting to develop, they need something they can still sell and raise cash with, even under those circumstances, and nothing even begins to compare with the U.S. Treasury market in terms of the depth and liquidity of the market. You can sell really big positions in size without moving the needle too much on price, and you're always going to find a ready buyer for your U.S. Treasury bonds. That's the reason that the U.S. dollar is still at the center of the global financial system. So if you think about this as an engineering problem, and you're one of the people or some group of people around the world who see it as a problem, the answer to that problem has to be to create the viable alternative, not to the dollar, but to the U.S. Treasury bond market, because there simply is no other sovereign bond market that can compete. What I describe in the book is that just as equity markets have been redesigned in recent years to use liquidity rebates in order to incentivize providers of liquidity to add more liquidity to the market. Now, when that's happened in equity markets, it's mostly been a free giveaway to high-frequency traders, which I think is unfortunate. But the point is, they were able to increase the amount of liquidity in the system just by changing the market mechanism without changing the underlying securities themselves. So what I contend is, you could design a digital sovereign bond market, which means that the bonds are denominated in your new digital currency system, and you design it from the ground up with the express engineering goal of providing central bankers with a better mousetrap, with a superior alternative to the U.S. Treasury bond market for the purpose of providing them with central bank reserve assets that can easily be liquidated in a crisis. And I describe a number of mechanisms that are possible with a digital sovereign bond market that wouldn't be possible in a conventional market system. So, you know, it's a unique capability of digital technology. As I said in the book, I'm just scratching at the surface. I've got a few early ideas about how this might work. But what I predict, my central prediction of the book, is that over the next 20 to 30 years, we're going to see a major change where the new age space race is a competition between national governments to see who is going to be in control of the digital currency system, which becomes the new global reserve currency. And it's not just replacing the dollar. There's lots of other benefits. But I think if you say one of your goals is replace the dollar as the world's global reserve currency, you've got to just stop right there and say, wait a minute, it's impossible to achieve that goal unless you can provide a viable alternative to U.S. treasuries. How are you going to do that? My answer is design a digital sovereign bond market from the ground up with the design goal of satisfying the needs of central bankers.
Eric, as we close, if you would mind, can you give us a little bit of background on how you became interested in this subject, first of all, and really where your technical expertise comes into play when we're thinking about technology, money, and how all this fits together in terms of the geopolitics that you just discussed with creating a digital sovereign bond market. How does your background lend to you writing this book in the first place?
Well, I'll go way back. It starts with I spent my teenage years at the Artificial Intelligence Laboratory at MIT learning all about the internet when it was still called the ARPANET. And I learned from some of the smartest people in the world about distributed software systems and how to design them. And I was just a teenager at the time. And when I got involved in, got my first job working in industry, I was shocked at, it seemed like they were just stuck in the dark ages. And all that I really did in my career, frankly, was to take what I'd learned as a teenager at MIT and to promote it as what it now has a name, which is called service-oriented architecture. But I came up with a way to build distributed application systems that were designed from the ground up with the goal of being able to communicate over the network with other application software. So it was a way to get the computer programs in a large business enterprise talking to one another. And that trend didn't get its name, service-oriented architecture, until after I had actually sold my company and retired in 1998. having spent my entire career as a distributed software systems architect and an expert on distributed systems technology, when cryptocurrency came around in 2008, 2009, 2010, I was just getting emails from everybody I know who was familiar with my background saying, oh my gosh, Eric, you know, you were a distributed systems guy in the IT space, and now you're a finance guy. You got to have like the perfect credentials to be a cryptocurrency guru. You must be totally all over this cryptocurrency thing. And what I said, and it was a mistake in the beginning, frankly, I said, no, my first career was distributed systems, but my second career was running a macro hedge fund. And I really have spent quite a few years studying the international monetary system and learning how it works, learning the role of the dollar as the world's global reserve currency, questioning how long that can last. I've been questioning that long before it got popular. 10 years ago, I was talking about the question of how long the dollar could retain its status as the world's global reserve currency, and it's always been a fascination of mine. So at first, the mistake I made is I looked at cryptocurrency and I made the same mistake that everybody else is still making, which is I looked at it the way everybody's thinking about it, which is it realistic for libertarian privacy activists who have invented a better mousetrap, and it's definitely a better mousetrap digital currency, who are coining their own money in a system like Bitcoin. They're creating their own currency system independent of government and promoting it as a better alternative to government-issued money. Is the government going to let them get away with that long-term? And my answer was decidedly no. I don't think that they're going to get away with it. And by the way, I hope I'm wrong about that. I would love to see the world change to the point where libertarian values are adopted by everyone, and we decide that it's better for the private sector to issue its own currency system to compete with government money. But I just don't see that happening in this world that we live in, where if anything, the major trend is away from individual liberty and toward more collectivism. I think that the government is going to insist on controlling the issuance of money. And for that reason, I was an extreme skeptic of cryptocurrency, not because it wasn't the coolest technology idea I'd ever seen. It was, and I had always felt that way about it. But I just thought, I don't see how something like Bitcoin is going to be allowed to advance to competing with other currencies in the global financial system when government's not in charge of it. What I wasn't doing, and what I've only realized in the last couple of years, is the importance of separating the invention of distributed ledger and double spend proof digital cash, which was invented by the cypherpunks who created the Bitcoin cryptocurrency, and saying, wait a minute, that's the invention that's going to change the world. It really is. It's just the people who invented it are probably not going to continue to be allowed to do it their way. So far, they're still getting away with it. I predict that, unfortunately, I'm not saying I want this, but unfortunately, I predict that government will eventually take over and outlaw Bitcoin. As I say, as I go into a fair amount of detail in the book, debunking this myth that government is powerless to outlaw cryptocurrency. That's nonsense. Government can very easily outlaw cryptocurrency. And when they do, I predict that what will happen is government-issued digital currency, exactly as Christine Lagarde started talking about on the very same day that my book came out. I thought that was so cool. That's going to be where the big trend is. And the opportunity in the private sector is going to be to engineer a digital currency system which is designed to please central bankers, not designed to attack central bankers' authority, but rather to please them and to offer them something better than what they have now, so that they want to abandon the conventional system and get on board with a new government-issued digital currency system, which will be designed and engineered by the private sector, but it will be the government that is doing the actual coining of money and administration of the monetary policy functions that that system enables. And unfortunately, it will be the exact opposite of Bitcoin. It will be designed to give government more power, not less power. And we, the people, very much need to get involved in that process and make sure it's not too much power and that we don't get to an Orwellian outcome. But basically, I've always been fascinated with both the future of the global monetary system and with distributed computing technology, which is what I spent my whole career doing in the software business. And it's only in the last year or two two that I've realized, wait a minute, just because I don't think cryptocurrency is viable, it's not because there's anything wrong with digital currency technology. It's because I don't think that the libertarian activists that are behind it are going to get away with it for very much longer. It doesn't mean that the world is not going to benefit from the brilliant inventions that they brought forward. And unfortunately, I just think it's going to be in the hands of the power is and control is going to be in the hands of government rather than the private sector. I don't like it that way, but I'm a realist, and I think that's what's coming.
I would agree with you on that. I think that is the most realistic outcome. With that said, Eric, is there anything that we didn't bring up in today's interview regarding your book? Again, the title of it is Beyond Blockchain, The Death of the Dollar and the Rise of Digital Currency, that you'd like to leave with our audience.
That's a tough one, Chris. You know, you're one of the only people in the podcasting game who actually reads the book before doing the interview. So I think you've hit it pretty well. The goal of the book is to describe to people how to interpret events as they unfold. I don't have a prediction of who the winner is. What I predict is there are a number of competing forces. The world is going to see a new digital currency revolution where digital currency technology completely revolutionizes the design of the international monetary system. It's not going to happen quickly. I'm thinking 20 to 30 years for this to fully play out. The players that are involved, the cryptocurrency guys want their cryptocurrency to be the answer. And the whole world just says, yeah, we're going to use Bitcoin and to replace the dollar. I'd love to see that happen. I think it's profoundly unlikely. At some point, the U.S. government will wake up and recognize their opportunity to maintain their stranglehold monopoly over the global financial system by advancing a digital dollar. So far, they haven't even begun to see the opportunity yet. Russia and China clearly see the opportunity. And this is one of the things I really emphasize in the book, is it's not like they haven't figured this out. Nobody filed more patents related to digital currency technology in 2017 than the People's Bank of China, the Chinese Central Bank. You've got Sergei Glazyev, the father of the de-dollarization strategy, out giving keynote speeches to blockchain conferences in Europe. Something's going on with Russia and China. What are they up to exactly? I speculate in the book, but number one, I don't know exactly what they're up to. And number two, I definitely don't know whether they'll be successful. This is going to be a power struggle to see who's in charge of the digital currency system that defines the future of the global monetary system. Unfortunately, I don't think that libertarian privacy activists who invented Bitcoin are going to be in charge at the end. But for the moment, they're certainly the smartest kids on the block with respect to the technology. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. And the goal of the book is to help you understand the whole picture of what's going on, why it's happening, and how to interpret events as they unfold on the global stage in coming years.
Well, Eric, you've written a phenomenal book, and I do want to encourage our audience to pick it up if you want to know how these things are going to unfold, as you said, over the next 10, 20, 30 years. It is very clear that this is the way things are going to proceed, and you make a number of predictions. And as you mentioned, with the creation of a digital sovereign bond market, that is very likely going to be the way we're going to see these things unfold. So if you want to dive in and get more detail on all of this, definitely encourage you pick up his book. It was released on October 24th. It is available on Amazon. And go ahead and buy a copy today. Eric, it was a pleasure speaking with you on the show. We look forward to speaking with you again.
Thanks so much, Chris. One final note. The book in both paperback and Kindle form is on Amazon. The audio book, though, is not on Amazon. That's available at macrovoices.com/BB for Beyond Blockchain.
All right, Eric. Well, hey, take care, all the best, and I wish you continued success with this book and many more interviews to come.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
So once again, that was Eric Townsend. He is the host of Macro Voices podcast. His background is as a distributed software architect, and he worked pretty heavily in the internet's early days, making a lot of money selling his company. A very fascinating background, and he touches upon that in his book as well, discussing how that played out. And then he launched into investments and hedge funds. So he has a really good understanding of not only distributed networks, the software that is used to run these systems, but also how blockchain technology fits into the global payment system. And so again, the title of the book is Beyond Blockchain, The Death of the Dollar and the Rise of Digital Currency. So in summary of what we discussed in today's podcast, I'm going to read a quote from his book. He writes, "The invention of digital cash enables government-issued digital currency systems that could completely modernize the global monetary system. The potential benefits to society are so great that it's hard to grasp their full magnitude. But there's also a very good chance that a digital currency system introduced by China and Russia could upstage the US dollar and replace it as a global reserve currency, which could cause devastating consequences for the US economy. Which country wins the new digital currency space race could change the course of human history." And Eric, with his unique background and understanding of the global monetary system, paves the way and predicts the way in which this is likely to happen. If you want to learn more about it, I definitely recommend reading his book. I'm Chris Sheridan. You're listening to FS Insider.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.